All right, welcome to this week's Media Dribble. I'm Matt Murray, and since this is the pilot episode, I will mention that I work at a major television network.
I'm Dan Seberg, and I work within the tech/entertainment field in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Andrew Schwartz, and I work as a recording engineer in the Los Angeles area at a kind of mid-level recording studio.
And it is important to note that you two are both out in L.A. I'm in New York, so we are doing this from remote locations, which does kind of make me want to ask you guys because, you know, we record this in a way we can't see one another. I was hoping maybe, Dan, we'll start with you. Walk me through what you need to have going on around you in order to sit down and be comfortable to record a podcast like this.
Well, right now, it's I'm just sitting at my desk. It's actually a little bit warm. I closed my window, and so I think my neighbor's watching Jurassic Park or something. It was pretty loud. But essentially, just my MacBook and some, you know, iPod headphones.
What's the weather like in LA? You said you had to close the window.
I haven't stepped outside since 9 a.m., so I have no idea.
It's nice. It's I haven't been outside yet, actually, but it's nice every day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks nice today.
Well, Andrew, what's your setup like then?
Well, I'm sitting in my nice Los Angeles apartment, completely surrounded by IKEA furniture. Mm-hmm. I have a carafe of water on a coaster, a nice glass. Nothing else to say. I'm in my pajamas because, you know, as a recording engineer, we don't start very early.
Yet it's funny, you're a recording engineer, yet you're using 1993 sound equipment to record this, which I find interesting.
Yeah, I am currently the least technologically advanced when it comes to this current recording.
You're recording this on a Walkman?
Yeah.
I personally, I have a candle going. It's a fireside candle, so it smells like a campfire in my room.
Is it still, is it dark over there
yet? No, in New York, it's, we actually are light out to like 7:30 now.
Okay.
So it's not too bad, but I can have my window open. It's like 60 outside right now, so it's not too bad. So I've got that going on.
Okay.
So basically the candle is, combating the smell of homeless people's piss outside.
Oh, that's a shame.
And then I have a tea. It's, like apple cinnamon. And that's pretty delicious. I'm not going to lie about that. And then the best part, I'm drinking a milk stout beer, and it's home brewed. Picked up home brewing over the past 4 months or so.
Okay.
And it's good stuff.
All right. So like I told you guys earlier, I was planning to drink during this. I was gonna, I was gonna pick up some two-buck chuck from Trader Joe's, but next weekend, I'm going to Dayton, Ohio for a little reunion, and I really got to prepare my body. Like, I got to get hydrated because I've been hurting recently. So, no drinking during this, just water, and hopefully that works.
So, how many times have you been, like, back to Dayton since you've graduated?
So, the last time I was back was actually when I drove from New York to L.A., which was the fall after I graduated. So I'm trying to think of, almost 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah. So I pretty much just kind of, I booked a flight and I told all the roommates, look, I'm coming this weekend, whoever can make it. And it seems like all eight of us are going to be there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Including Joey, who should have been on this podcast, but isn't currently.
We'll see what we can do about that long term.
Yeah. Yeah. That will... He'll be on next time.
And Andrew, have you gone back to visit Hartford in an official capacity since you graduated?
I have not been in the state of Connecticut. No, that's not true. I've not been to Hartford since I graduated. No, I'd like to, but there just hasn't been time.
And it's
last time I was on the East Coast was actually when I visited you.
Yeah, that's been
two years ago.
And a half? Yeah, 2 years of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, man.
I've been to Ohio since then.
Right.
The hometown, Cincinnati, but not the East Coast, college.
Right. To spend money, like to go to somewhere that, if you're going to leave, it's got to, you got to have a reason to, like, you know, go that far out of your way, especially you go.
Well, that's the thing is I'm spending, it's going to cost, the ticket was like $330, you know, getting a cab there and back from the airport. That's going to be at least, I don't know, another $80. And then housing there, we're running out these, some friends who are now, I think they're seniors or no, they're juniors. We're running out their place for like $500 or something. So I'm spending $500 just to go to Dayton, Ohio, and sit at a bar for 3 days.
You might be the only person spending that money, much money, to go to Dayton,
to Ohio. Ever do that. Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. But for me, it's a, you know, I want to see everybody. Right. So
yeah, I'm going back to Kentucky in 2 weeks, and that will probably only be maybe the second time I've gone back after I've graduated, or at least since I've moved to New York.
Yeah,
you know, like when I first graduated, I had like a month window where obviously I went back, you know, a couple times before I left, but, you know, and that's only an hour from my hometown. So I have even less of an excuse than like you guys live far from where you actually went to school, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, that makes sense. All right. Let me see here. Do we want to go, and we can cut this little part out. I'm just asking you guys, do you want to go into the news stuff now? Like, the media stuff?
Yeah, I mean, maybe give like a brief overview of what we're going to, you know, kind of talk about. You know, it's pretty unstructured, but maybe just give
a
synopsis.
Maybe just mention, instead of saying like a specific structure for each time, I'll talk about, now we kind of want to talk about news, you know, within our industry or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So sure. Now, guys, we have the, you know, the luxury of being spread out across, you know, all of the big three industries of entertainment, between the three of us. So, you know,
and we're all rising A-listers. I have to throw that out there.
Right.
I consider myself a B-lister. We have a motto at our company. We take you straight to the middle. The top is too crowded.
I started at the lowest position. I've been slowly working my way up. So I think
that's actually all of us. That might be interesting to point out. I started out as an intern with the company I currently work at. I know, Matt, you started kind of at the entry level, and we're all sort of working our way.
Well, I'd actually even been an intern and then worked up to, like, the bottom rung of being employed, and then, yeah, just slowly worked up. And Dan, you said you did the same thing.
Yeah, I was right from the bottom, and I didn't really think I was going to stay at my company that long, but, you know, I reached the year mark, and I'm still there.
I remember you mentioning that, saying you thought it might be a temporary thing, and then now, it's always a good thing when you go somewhere and you're, I don't want to say surprised, but like, you know, pleasantly surprised by a place, and, you know, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. But anyway, you know, within film and then music and television, to speak in broad terms, obviously all of us sort of have overlaps, and almost everywhere leaks back into like a digital or online space now. You know, that's not even, you know, it's pretty rare that would be its own thing. But anyway, speaking within entertainment, you know, film, TV, and music, we cover that. So we want to talk about each week at least a news story, if not more. You know, if there's enough stories that lend themselves to, you know, being worth discussion, we want to try to cover as much as we can each week. So this week, Dan, why don't you start within your field? There's been a pretty, you know, big news story, and we'll kind of chat about that first.
Oh, I don't know this. I don't know this news story.
Yours would be Roger Ebert. I think that's the most obvious.
Oh, yeah.
So let's pause. You bring it up like you know exactly what I was talking about.
All right. So, yeah. This past week, Roger Ebert, who was pretty much changed the way, you know, film reviews and film critics, you know, worked and you know, gained recognition within newspapers and online and TV. Unfortunately, he passed away, and it was interesting because about a week before, he said he was going to kind of ease out of reviewing films and really only focus on, you know, some major films or stuff that, you know, he was really passionate about. And then sadly, a week later, he passed away, and he had fought, you know, cancer, I think the last decade, maybe decade plus of his life. And, you know, It was unexpected because a week before, you know, he was in good spirits and, you know, kind of caught a lot of people off guard.
Right.
Myself, I was never a huge fan of him. But, you know, for his industry and what he did, total utmost respect. It was pretty big. That's probably last week's biggest story within the entertainment, you know, movies.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm not personally a huge fan of him as a person, or I should say, of his reviews. I rarely agree with critics, you know, or specifically him. You know, I feel like they were always sort of the, I don't want to say like uppity or like, you know, the kind that kind of turn their nose up at stuff if it's not like something that's going to guarantee itself to win an Oscar.
It's hard to kind of agree with someone whose job is to criticize art, you know, when that's not necessarily the point of why it was made in that.
Right.
It's,
I mean, the other thing,
obviously, there's going to be people who disagree with what they have to say.
Right. And that's his thing, you know, if, it's to get people talking about it. And, what I find kind of interesting is what bothered me the most about him, there was one specific thing. I don't know if you guys remember this, but in 2011, the summer, do you remember when Ryan Dunn from Jackass died? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about this.
Yeah. Had you heard about this, Andrew? He sent out a tweet like right after Ryan Dunn from Jackass got in a car accident and said something like, you know, friends don't let other friends – or friends don't let jackasses drive drunk or something like that. And It was like honestly within like 24 hours of him dying. And like I get the idea, but you know, it just seemed a little unnecessary.
Insensitive.
Yeah. So that was one of the first things that crossed my mind when I heard the news, is it's just like, you know, and his death wasn't necessarily unexpected either. I think, you know, how long ago did he have that surgery? He hasn't been able to talk in what, like 3 years or maybe longer?
Yeah, it's 3 or 4 years. He actually had his whole lower jaw removed.
Right.
And I know like that I think the cancer had come back, but for me, like not following it was pretty pretty unexpected.
Right. And I think it's one of those things that kind of just fade in the, you know, the background of people's minds. I mean, because ever since Siskel and Ebert had the show that was actually on all the time, I don't think that they'd even been on television in any capacity and probably like 6 years or something like that, right? I know like Roper took Siskel's spot, but were they even still like a tandem at that point?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, lucky for Ebert, I mean, he lost his ability to talk, but, you know, he didn't lose his ability to write.
Right.
You know, he had that luxury where he was a pretty, pretty great writer and could get his point across. I mean, it's he'll be missed within the film community and, you know, within critics, but in all reality the game is completely changing just with, you know, internet and blogs and what we're doing, podcasts, like, you know, it's a dying breed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, and now there's a you know, obviously larger opportunity for like community reviews, or like you could type in the name of a movie on Twitter and you can see what every person that's watching it thinks of it. You can go to you know, any kind of aggregate, obviously Rotten Tomatoes being the biggest one, and see, you know, 140 character quick blurbs out of longer reviews, whereas those two like to kind of expand and look, you know, pretty heavily and deeply into film. And I don't think anybody really takes the time to even read reviews of that capacity anymore, at least, you know, not in our generation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
I personally belong to a I don't know what you would call it, a deal, have either of you guys heard of MoviePass?
No.
It's a, it's something you can subscribe to. It's basically like Netflix, except for in theaters. And
oh, okay.
What happens is you subscribe to this company and you pay $24.99 a month, at least here in New York. I think it differs depending where you live. But that allows you to see as many movies as you want in theaters. So
really?
You check in on an app and you tell it which theater you're at and what showtime you're going to, you know, for a specific film. And then it sends that amount of money to your card. And the theaters don't have to, like, agree. It's not like there's participating theaters. It's the card that you use, as long as they take Discover card, it works like a, you know, like a debit card. And you just swipe it when you buy your tickets. Obviously, there are limits. Like, you can only go to one movie a day. And you can only see each movie once. And it doesn't apply to 3D movies.
But exactly, $25 a month, it's a good deal.
Exactly. Here in New York, at least, you go to two movies, you're already in the black, you know. Yeah. So I've been doing that, and like it's given me the opportunity to watch anything. You know, even if it has the potential to suck, you don't care, because if you don't have anything going on like a Tuesday night, you know, why not go?
Exactly. Now I might look into that. That sounds pretty nice.
Well, yeah. Here in LA, you can easily spend $14 on a just a ticket.
Exactly.
If you go to the wrong, you know, the right theater. Yeah.
Exactly.
And speaking of tickets, a little pet peeve of mine, which I was going to bring up later, but I think it's a good kind of segue, is here in Los Angeles, I don't know how it is in New York City, but all the theaters have, you know, assigned seating. So when you buy your ticket, you pick a row and you pick a seat, which is great because you know exactly where you're going to be. I went to go see Spring Breakers, unfortunately, 3 weeks ago.
No good?
It was horrible. I loathe my generation from watching that movie. It was horrible. But I think
fair enough.
Oh yeah. I mean that was it was visually a great movie to look at.
That's what cool would have lured me in. But I think I'm speaking visually as far as the young actresses.
The women. Involved. Yeah, I mean yeah, it was pretty sexually explicit. But so leading up to the movie, we get there, we sit in our seats, and, you know, theater goes dark, previews start, and a group of four people kind of walk up, and they're trying to find their row and their seat, and there's people sitting in their seat. So it starts this massive argument, and literally the movie is like now 5 to 10 minutes in. Mm-hmm. So management had to come in. You know, it was so disruptive, and I was like, you know what seat you're in. Don't try to sit in somebody else's seat. Like,
right, like it's all
just
ticket.
Infuriated me. Yeah. Like, and I think it ruined the movie experience for me. But yeah, it's on your ticket. You know, respect the rules, and it wasn't even that packed.
Right.
So I don't know what the issue was. Why they couldn't sit anywhere else.
I personally, we don't have that as frequently around here. We do have it though. I actually had it last night. I went to see Jurassic Park in 3D, which, by the way, if you haven't yet, it's awesome. Make sure to do it in IMAX. I honestly don't think I'd ever seen anything on like a true IMAX screen. Like I'm saying, this thing took up my entire field of vision. You have to wear the ridiculous 3D glasses that are like the size of your face. But it's because, you know, no matter where you look, like you need to make sure your whole eye is actually encompassed by the 3D glasses. So, I mean, it was like watching a whole different movie to see it in a theater, and it was cool to see it with, you know, all these people that are obviously big fans are like clapping every time Samuel L. Jackson says "Hold on to your butts," you know, like they know the classic lines.
The least Samuel L. Jackson movie ever. Like, he's just a normal guy in it, I think.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. I don't think he ever raises his voice.
Yeah,
it was interesting to see him. But what's kind of funny about watching that movie now is like, it's funny you said your neighbor might be watching it right now, so maybe you can look out your window and watch the moments I'm about to talk about. But
I'm looking right now, but I don't see anything.
But no, Samuel L. Jackson is you're like smoking indoors. There are like certain things you watch, and it's like the movie hasn't, you know, aged at all. Like it could have been made right now, and then there are just a few like little Easter eggs that you're like, oh yes, that was made in 1993. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's funny that
it holds up too.
It's ridiculous.
My God.
It's the fact that like they don't rely on CGI. You know, and
right,
like now anything that uses CGI, like you might have thought it looked great in 2005 and it looked bad in 2008, and then in 2008, you know, the stuff that they made then now looks so bad, and it's like,
yeah, it looks like shit.
The reliance on like dropping like, you know, visual effects people on doing things in person, you know, like makeup and stuff like that. You know, it's caused movies to become dated a lot faster. But it was funny to watch them like talk about an interactive CD-ROM or like a screen that you can touch, you know, and it'll like, respond. Like at the time, you forget, like before the iPhone, that was crazy. Like touching a screen wasn't something that you thought about. Or
exactly,
even like bank ATMs, you had the buttons on the side that like lined up with what you wanted to do. But like ATMs now, you know, you're touching the screen and you're going. But on Friday night, I saw the reboot of Evil Dead. I think you saw this, Dan.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
No, I mean, I think I meant to say you saw that I had seen it. I know you
saw
it.
Yeah, I saw your Facebook status.
You saw that I had seen it. And
yeah.
No, but it's it didn't rely on the CGI stuff, you know, and I think that's why, like, I honestly don't know how this movie was put in theaters. I really do not.
I heard it was just way over the top, gore.
Way over the top, but fun. It didn't lose sight of fun. It's not like a Saw, you know, where you like, you feel like you want to vomit. It's just like, but the stuff looked really realistic because somebody put in the time to like figure out how to make it look real without relying on a computer. So I'm hoping,
yeah,
maybe there's like a trend, you know, everything kind of goes in cycles. So maybe people are trying to
invest a little bit more instead of just trying to get the easy paycheck or whatever.
Exactly. Like there are times for computers. There always have been, but like it's not a crutch, you know, maybe that's what people are working toward. So Andrew,
kind of the opposite of the whole like Avatar sort of approach.
Exactly.
Where everything was digitally or computer enhanced at least.
Right.
Which I saw Avatar, which in theaters was great. I saw it on a just normal TV screen recently, and it looked very odd, just even a few years after it came out.
I know.
I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, what is it, 4 years old now? I think it came out in like 2009.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's weird to see how fast stuff becomes dated like that. But, Andrew, your piece of news within your industry in the past couple weeks, if you want to walk us through it.
Well, mine's another death of an icon, I guess. Phil Ramone died recently.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he was in his mid to late 70s, 79, I think. And for everyone who doesn't know, Phil Ramone was a producer, engineer and producer in the music industry. He worked with pretty much everyone, Rod Stewart, I think Sinatra. Let's see here, I have an official list.
Do you know if he was still active, like in any capacity?
Absolutely. He had just won a Grammy in 2012.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was big news because he was in his 70s, but he died of a brain aneurysm.
Oh, jeez.
Which can literally happen to anyone. It happens to athletes all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things that just kind of, it's really scary because it can just kind of pop up and then you're done.
So it didn't really have anything to do with his age?
Yeah. I mean, I guess not. I don't know enough about, you know, the science behind all that, but.
Right.
You know, he worked with everyone. Billy Joel, Jason Mraz, Madonna, Paul McCartney, the whole works. He actually has won 14 Grammys, which is the third most of any producer.
Gotcha.
Oh, wow.
Who is like his equivalent now? You know what I mean? Like, is there anyone even on his level?
Well, it's hard to say because he was a producer and an engineer.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, Rick Rubin is obviously putting out a lot of big records, but he's solely a producer. There's a lot of other big producers who are doing that, but he was an engineer as well. Mm. And a lot of the big engineers are not necessarily producing. There's a lot of names I could list. Chris Lord-Alge, Tony Maserati, all these guys who are engineers who are not
in the limelight.
They're not producing at the same time. You know, they're more specialist. He kind of did both.
Right.
And I can't think of anyone who, you know, I guess would be equivalent necessarily. Right. And he crossed over a lot of genres. You know, a lot of his early stuff was with John Coltrane doing a lot of really serious jazz records.
Right. So he's been active, for like 50 years almost.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He won his first Grammy in 65.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
And yeah. He won one just in 2012. I mean, just to have a career that spans, what is that, 4 decades?
Yeah. That's impressive.
No, 5 decades.
And relevant and successful.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah.
At the top of the game for a really long time. So his death is a big kind of, I wouldn't say it's a blow to the industry because obviously everyone's going to keep making great records, but it's definitely to the people in the industry, it's big news.
Right.
And he was supposed to be a really great guy. I actually know a few people who worked with him, and they said he was just great to work with and a real nice guy.
It's cool. I mean, is it, you know, I don't know much about, you know, the path of engineers or producers, but it seems like, you know, they're less inclined to become like pigeonholed into a specific genre. I mean, is that the case? You know, it sounds like, because you named everything that he'd worked with, and like, you know, That was stuff that spanned almost every genre of music.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you're a top level person, you know, and if you kind of get to just pick what you want to work on. All the top people are really kind of cross genres because it's still music. You know, music is music.
Right.
It's not like an artist where your voice lends yourself to a certain style or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these top people are doing any sort of kind of style they want,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my piece of television news is not...
It's not death, is it?
It's not death. At least not in the traditional sense. It's more of a changing of the guard this week. It had been rumored for a long time, but this week there was the official announcement that Jimmy Fallon would be taking over for Jay Leno on The Tonight Show. And I'm happy about that for a few reasons. One, I was never a big Leno fan. That's not to say like I didn't like him. It was just never really my taste. And I think it's probably more symbolic of a bigger scale kind of thing, you know, which is that the style of late night TV is just a little different. You know, it was catering to a different generation. And that's not to say like in age, it's just a different style of show now, you know? And I think, for maybe a lot of the reasons that when Fallon first started, that people actually didn't like him. I think that part of that might have been because he was ahead of the curve a little bit, you know? And as people kind of settled in and realized that he kind of actually understood what, you know, needed to happen, I think that might have ended up being why, you know, now he's set to take over at a pretty young age. You know, I don't know exactly mm-hmm. how old Carson was when he started on Tonight. But, you know, Fallon's not even 40 yet. And to be taking over The Tonight Show seems like, you know, a pretty young age to be doing that. But, you know, he understood.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out because his show right now, to me, is very feels very young and sort of kind of silly sometimes.
Right.
In a way that appeals to at least, you know, people our age. But it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how people, older generations kind of
adapt to
receive the show.
Or, mm-hmm. like, does he change, you know? And I hope the answer to that is right. that he doesn't. And I don't think he will because I just think he understands a little bit more about the viral videos. You know, he'll do, like, you know, have the Roots play. I don't know if you guys have seen where he'll have a guest do a cover of a song and the Roots will play, like, elementary school instruments, you know? Or, like, he'll do this Neil Young impression and do covers of, you know, popular songs or TV show theme songs and stuff like that. And I think it was when that stuff kind of started to go viral, it helped Fallon out, you know? And
yeah, and I think part of it, it's even more than that. Just like you said, viral. I mean, YouTube in itself is a platform where these guys can make money and generate revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if Jimmy Fallon is getting shares and, you know, builds a network outside of TV, that's, you know, extremely important. So I could definitely see why they made the switch.
Well, exactly. And people aren't consuming TV through TV anymore. You know what I mean? That's like probably half of the traffic, you know? And I think part of that is, you know, the age of his audience. But now it's sort of, you know, Facebook honestly is a big indicator of the way that, you know, online has trended in general, and Facebook is right at the head of that curve. Kind of how like college kids were the only ones on Facebook at first because they were, you know, sort of the most into tech. That spread down to high school because they got it next, and then it opened up to everyone. That sort of path is kind of what's happened for, you know, the digital world in general. And, you know, now like our parents are, you know, on iPads or, you know, getting news on their phone or watching clips on YouTube apps. And Fallon gets that. But speaking a little bit less about like the money side of things, but kind of back more to what Andrew said is I think, you know, I think Fallon, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does as far as, you know, what direction he takes the show. Like, do the Roots stay around? You know, do they?
That was kind of a big question. Yeah, for me at least, because to my taste, I think that's a huge part of the show.
Right.
And obviously the nature of the show would change a lot if they were not the house band.
Mm. I mean, but, they play with guests. They do a lot of segments. They'll do, you know, stuff with audience members. And
I don't see any reason where they would need to leave, you know, from, you know, the show's standpoint.
Right. Well, and a big thing that might be able to help them stay, and this is another interesting point, I'm curious to hear what you guys think, they'll be able, or at least be more likely to stay a part of the show, because there were sort of two pieces of news in one, which is that Jimmy Fallon is bringing The Tonight Show back to New York for the first time in almost 40 years.
Wow.
So, you know, what do you guys think about the fact it's leaving L.A.? I want to say Carson moved it in, like, about 1972. So it is almost exactly 40 years since it's been in 30 Rock. And, you know, Fallon's bringing it back. Fallon's from New York. His family's in New York. And, again, the roots live in Philadelphia. You know, so obviously they're going to be more apt to stay now that it's here. But do you guys have thoughts on that? I mean, my initial thought is all the stars live in L.A. You know what I mean? But I guess nowadays that's not that big of an issue, you know, to get people out here.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that?
Well, I think... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I think the show, or at least Jimmy Fallon in general, feels very New York in a sense. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I was going to say this exact same thing. I mean, with Saturday Night Live and, you know, he's just, yeah, he's very East Coast.
Right. Yeah, it's just the kind of the vibe he gives off in the show. He gives off. Like, where Jay Leno feels very, very L.A.
Right.
In just the, his approach to his show.
And it's interesting
because... Which is not very specific. But.
Dan, you're from New York, right?
Yeah, I'm from upstate New York, but...
And Andrew, you went to school here. So I'm interested about this, too. You say, because you guys would get it more than me, what does that mean? And this doesn't necessarily need to pertain to entertainment. I'm kind of curious. But define, because you guys are more able to say, you know, this is very East Coast, this is very West Coast. What are those personality traits like for you? What do you see in a person or a thing, you know, when you say that, for either coast?
I mean, I think there's a definite style. I mean, L.A. as a whole, as a city, there's kind of different neighborhoods, per se, or different areas where... You know, different groups associate.
Right.
You know, so Venice is pretty kind of hipsterish and it's growing with a lot of money. Santa Monica is very clean and very, you know, well off. Mm-hmm. Culver City is growing, a lot of young people. You know, there's different areas.
Right.
And a lot of people from LA, you know, migrated here, kind of an exodus from their, you know, original places. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's more like, you know, there's an attitude with the East Coast. Like, you know, there's a directness, there's a bluntness that, you know, I still think I hold on to, and people will even call me out on it at work.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'll ever lose that because that's always in the back of my mind. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of my take on it.
Andrew, do you agree?
Yeah, I wouldn't have anything to add to that. It's kind of a difficult thing to explain in terms of how he could feel more East Coast, you know, in terms of his show.
Right.
But just the whole, like, Jay Leno thing where he's really into cars and you see him driving around, you just picture him with kind of, you know, sunglasses driving around. It feels... Right.
Obviously, no one
doesn't feel
New
like
York.
A city guy.
Right. No one from New York is going to be into cars because nobody has one.
Yeah, and, you know, L.A. is a driving city.
Right.
And, you know, there's no, you know, there's L.A., there's downtown, but, you know, I've been downtown maybe twice in a year and a half I've lived here.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, there's different hubs.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
And it's, you know, it's very wide. It's very expensive.
Well, downtown is just another neighborhood. It just happens to be centrally located.
Yeah, right. And I think, though, I think Dan hit the nail on the head as far as, like, the bluntness. I think that's the bigger thing because, you know, even New York now is sort of becoming, you know, a little bit more neighborhood based. Like Williamsburg has like become like the hipster capital of the world. And God, I mean, like, you know, you have the Bronx, you have Queens, you have, you know, Brooklyn sort of become like this trendy area. Manhattan, you have like all the, you know, metropolitans, you know. And so I think a lot of big cities, it's interesting, especially because, you know, coming from a place like Cincinnati, like Andrew and I do, it's interesting, you know, Cincinnati. There are suburbs, but there aren't really neighborhoods as far as Cincinnati goes. But you go to like a big city and it's like, there's just not space enough to be one unified place. It just can't happen. Mm-hmm. And LA is even more sprawled out, you know, than New York. But,
Well, yeah, Dan and I live in the same city officially, but we definitely live in very different places.
Yeah, it's not like if like Andrew's like, hey, let's get a drink up in North Hollywood. It's like, oh, Christ, I got to drive there. Right. but in reality, it's really not that far, and I think I always try to keep that in mind and, you know.
It's not, I mean, but on the wrong time of day,
yeah,
it could take you an hour to get there, or the right time of day, it could take you 15 minutes.
Right.
That's kind of the funky part about it.
It's funny because New York's sort of the opposite. Like, you guys are almost talking about like a physical distance that you have to travel, you know. Whereas in New York, it's like I could try to go see someone in Brooklyn, which, like, if you pull out your map, it's probably 2 miles, like, as the crow flies. But then I got to, like, go by a bus and then a subway, and it ends up taking me 45 minutes to get somewhere that's only a mile away. You know what I mean? It's, like, sort of the opposite effect. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
Andrew, do you have a car, right, out here?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that don't have cars, and I don't know how they get around in the city.
No, I mean,
you need a car.
There is no subway system, right?
There is.
There it's is?
Not entirely practical.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I live near a station, and I've used it a few times, like to go to a Dodgers game or something. But it's not practical to use regularly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you guys this. There's one, you know, kind of extra piece of news on what we were talking about with that, which is that, that, you know, obviously that leaves an opening in late night. And the number one person that's rumored to be replacing Jimmy is Seth Meyers. Had you guys heard that?
I have not.
I hadn't, but it kind of makes sense. I can picture it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if
it's so busy, though, isn't he?
Well, I think that, you know, so this would happen in spring of 2014. My guess is that would just mean that this would be his last season on SNL. Because if you think that, that'd have him done here in May, give him, you know, 7 to 9 months, basically, to kind of prepare. You know, because they're already building Jimmy's studio in 30 Rock. And, you know, that would obviously mean that once Jimmy is done, he can basically just move into this new studio and be ready to go. In theory, you could, you know, take a weekend off or not, a week off and then turn around and start on Tonight. But if they wanted to, he could be on Late Night on Friday. Go.
I feel like they're too similar, though. They're, you know.
I thought about that. I mean, is it going to become a thing where somebody that's hosted Weekend Update now just becomes the host of a late night show? But the other problem you have is, like, they're almost the same age. They're both relatively young. Like, what's going to have either of them go anywhere for a long time? And maybe that's not bad. You know, Johnny Carson was a legend and he did the show for, you know, 30 years. So Fallon's in a good position to do that. He's 38 years old. In 30 years, he'll be 68, which is about what Leno is right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It might not be such a bad thing, especially for, you know, NBC after the whole Conan thing. I mean, that's controversial. Anybody would be willing to say that. So some stability would not be the worst thing probably in their eyes as far as that goes.
Yeah.
As far as them being too similar, that's true. I mean, like, all of a sudden, whereas you had sort of, and Andrew touched on this earlier, you know, you had Leno playing to the people, you know, probably our parents' age, and then that ended, and then people our age were up to watch Late Night. Now you'd sort of have the same thing back to back.
So now, what, are you going to have some young guy doing the show? Like some sort of Justin Bieber, One Direction kind of?
Yes. One Direction's going to be, it's going to be Late Night with One Direction.
You know what I mean?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think Dan said it. It's like, I don't know if that's good or bad, but Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon are very,
for me, I don't watch either. I don't really watch. I used to watch a little bit of Conan, but, like, I don't know. I just don't watch Late Night at all. I mean, how many people do? What kind of ratings does Late Night bring in?
You know, I don't know as far as, you know, their totals. I think, honestly, they catch their tails probably a little bit more the next day with viral content. Like, let me see if I can find out.
Which is sort of a new
out.
Thing with the Jimmy Fallon style of show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something he plays to a little bit more?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. Like, to give you some perspective, I'm going to try to figure out exactly some numbers while we're chatting about this, but to give you an idea, like, a big show, you know, in primetime television, like, American Idol, like, in its peak, you know, would have been, like, had something, like, 20 million viewers, but that's like absurd. Like to get 10 to 15 million, you're doing fantastic.
Pretty good, you know what
I
mean? Yeah.
Whereas like a Fallon or something like that, you know, I don't know how many people sit down and watch it. I think it's more about how you do with your specific, you know, demo or how you do with your core audience, you know?
Yeah, and it's a different, you know, production cost or different and, you know, everything.
But it's every day, almost.
Here you go.
As opposed to a weekly kind of...
Here's what I can tell you guys. Jay Leno gets about 1.3 million viewers. So not bad for 11:30 at night. I mean...
And if it's, you know, it's five times, so...
Right, exactly.
You know, we're talking you know, maybe 8 to 10 million total throughout.
Right.
Yeah.
And to give you some perspective, what's kind of nice for Leno is that he's going out on top. You know, that's been a big part of this story. He's been number one almost the whole time. He's been at, you know, The Tonight Show over David Letterman. And he draws about this week he had 1.01 million viewers on average to Letterman's 871,000. So he wins by a pretty decent margin too.
All right. I mean,
so I think NBC is probably thinking that Fallon could actually, you know what, guys, I'm looking at total viewers. I'm wrong. I'm lying to you. NBC's...
You're lying to the listeners.
I'm lying to the listeners.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, don't apologize to us.
Total viewers, and this is for the week of March 25th through March 29th. NBC's Tonight had 3.5 million, and Late Show gets 2.7. So it's actually much bigger, and ABC's Kimmel is 2.6. And that's the other thing. That's probably... We didn't even mention that, but that's another reason they probably want Fallon there is because ABC, you know, moved Kimmel up, who's obviously much younger than Leno and Letterman, and Fallon is, you know, already had this sort of, you know, impression of kind of being the king of late night, but was stuck in this later time slot, and I think they saw an opportunity with Leno's contract ending to be like, all right, now's the time to get Fallon up in that spot before Kimmel kind of takes that key demo, you know.
Right, because from what I understand, he's been kind of gaining popularity, or his show has been obviously with the time change, but
right,
well, just sort of with the aging. Yeah, like you just said, with the aging of the other two major hosts, he's kind of filled a gap at this point.
What's also interesting to me is I'm looking Last Call with Carson Daly almost gets a million viewers, which is a lot better than I would have thought for a show on.
And that's a show I really like, actually.
It's well done.
I don't think a lot of people watch it, but.
It's well done. What time do those shows start for you guys? I mean, do they start still at 12:30?
Same time. They move it back 3 hours.
Damn.
So it's a delay.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even live.
You know, what's weird out here is the sports. I had to get used to the NFL waking up at
10,
you know, 8 in the morning to watch the game. I had to go to the bar at 8 in the morning to get a seat. It's just unbelievable.
I mean, what? Yeah, the game started at 10 a.m. for you
guys? 10.
Oh, I was every game. I would usually go right down the street every Niners game, and I would be pretty buzzed by, you know, noon, and I'd go back home, and it's, you know, hot, it's Sunday, it was just miserable.
Right.
Yeah, Sundays during football season it can be a little rough in LA.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Oh no.
Now, do you guys want a team? I mean, is that something you'd like to see? I don't understand how you can have like two teams in every other sport, but then not have a team in the most popular sport in another country.
The issue, I mean, I would love it. I think the issue is A, space for the stadium, B, parking for all the cars.
Right.
Now, what they are doing, though, right now is they're actually building a train that goes from downtown, I think right to the Staples Center, all the way. It's going to go all the way to Santa Monica. And right now, it's right near me.
Uh-huh.
So it's at kind of an awkward spot. But I think once it gets to Santa Monica, I think it will be used pretty frequently
right.
to get to Lakers games.
Well, and L.A. is actually considered to be one of the most forward-thinking, if not the most forward-thinking, in their public transportation as of right now.
Right.
Like in terms of what they're doing to enhance it and improve it. So... You know, if they can get that, stay on that same path and really make a really productive public transit metro system, then it might be easier to get to these sort of things.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so...
But I would love it. I would love it overall. I think it would be really, really cool.
It could never hurt, you know what I mean, to have a team, an NFL team. You know what I mean? Just like... it makes the most money. You know what I mean? People like it. I think the seasons are perfect in the NFL. You know what I mean? It's a perfect length.
Yeah.
And the way the games work out, like, everybody watches every game because there's, you know, so few. Whereas baseball, there's 160, you know, 162 games. So if you miss 100, you don't care because you're still watching 62. You know what I
mean? Yeah. And again, like, there's so many different people from so many different locations here. Everybody has their own team and their own bar they go to.
Right.
And to have something that big, I mean, football is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
To have a whole city behind that, it would be awesome. It would be incredible, really.
That's just sort of crazy to not have a team in one of the biggest sports in one of the biggest markets in the country. It seems sort of surprising that it's failed so many times.
Straight up, it's the second biggest market, period. You know what I mean? That's a humongous market.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, Dan, you are our wacky news correspondent.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably where – I know we're on pilot, so everything's a little tame right now.
Well, I was going to say we're trying to tone it down, but let's kick it up a notch.
No, these are, you know, legit news stories from the Huffington Post, actually. So, I mean, they're not over the top, but they're interesting. The headlines are interesting.
Well, let them rip.
So what I'm going to do is I want to read two headlines. And whichever one you guys choose, you know, I'll kind of dive into. Or maybe we'll do both.
Yeah, we'll pick one at least to go first. And then we'll probably eventually squeeze both out of you. But let's hear it.
I'm probably going to laugh. So give me.
I'm glad you said that because I had tea in my mouth. I'm not trying to spit on my laptop.
Okay.
Not today.
Okay, first headline. Russian man allegedly shoves foot up rectum of friend, killing him. Now this is... It's an unconfirmed report. That's headline number one.
Okay.
Number two, 84-year-old man allegedly pepper sprays security guard at bingo event.
Okay, I've actually heard the second story. Okay. At least I know of it. I don't know the
second story is a little more interesting because there's kind of some things to think about. The first one is...
So here's my thing. Let's start with number one because I know nothing about it. And then number two, I'm going to have you fill in the holes because I know the headline for the second story, but no details. So let's start with number one. Tell us the whole deal. Fill us in.
Okay. I'm just going to read part of the article. So, horrific crime or hoax? A news video has surfaced about a Russian man allegedly shoving his foot up a friend's rectum, killing him. The report in Russia claims that 28-year-old Vladimir... whatever his name is, of whatever, attacked in a drunken rage last month as the victim, Sergei, slept. The two had argued earlier over Vladimir's girlfriend. Sergei died of internal bleeding, police said in the clip. That's pretty much the sum. Nothing's been confirmed, but yeah.
So, hold on. He did it out of anger, correct?
Yeah, so I guess it seems like they were drinking, the three of them were drinking, and his buddy must have been saying something about his girlfriend. And as his buddy was, you know, in a slumber, he proceeded to...
He kicked his ass.
Yeah, literally.
I'm actually not surprised by any of this. This is the first I'm hearing in this article, but surprisingly, there's been a lot of talk of Russia and Russian culture at work lately. Believe it or not, we've had some Russian clients.
Okay.
And apparently, everyone there is just really mean to each other.
Yeah. They're all just and if you add off. An alcohol, it can get...
Right. There's actually a thing where people in Russia, there's the new thing where everyone has dashboard cams in their cars. Because road rage is such an issue where people will get out of their car and physically... assault you for cutting them off or any sort of thing. So people put cameras in their dashes to protect themselves in any sort of, you know, cord or anything like that.
I gotta say, though, I like that. You know why? Because I feel like, you know, in today's society, there's a tendency to try to be the tough guy when you're in your car because you believe that that exact thing that you just described won't happen. You know, right, you can flick someone off or cut them off and then just ignore your mirrors and then you don't have to deal with them ever again. But I like this idea of like, you cut me off, we hit this red light, and now I'm going to drag you out of your car and beat you senseless. So it's like, to some extent, it holds you a little bit more responsible for what you do when you're still in your car. But at the same time, you know, I'm not trying to...
Actually, a really fun game is to search on YouTube for Russian car cams, because you'll see some really crazy things of people just... Well,
that's how they caught the meteorite that passed over.
Yeah.
And they had all those cams.
So. You're exactly right. I never even thought about that.
So, yeah, that was an interesting story. Again, might not be true, but regardless, he faces up to 15 years in prison.
I'd like to think it is.
My other question about that, without getting too graphic here, but how do you get a clean enough entry to cause internal bleeding? You know what I'm saying? Like,
have to be at a side angle.
That's a big object and a small hole.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he was wearing steel-toe boots and repeatedly... kick this guy. Let's say 50 times.
I guess it doesn't necessarily matter where you're hitting him at that point.
I mean, his foot might have not entered.
Got it.
If he was shoeless, maybe.
Yeah.
That's weird. I mean, do we know? Did what you just said, Dan? Was it that amount of times, or was it like?
No. I'm just assuming.
Right. So you think it might have just ultimately been like a beating?
Yeah, but you know, he kicked his ass.
Right. That's the important part here.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about this bingo hall.
Yeah. So this one's a little interesting because there's some things to point out and to question here.
All right.
So sheriff deputies say an 84-year-old shot pepper spray at a security guard during a retirement community bingo event in Central Florida. The guard, 67-year-old Michael B. Okay. Now, right there, 67-year-old, is he also in the
Right. Retirement like, are they community? Implying people within their retirement community to be guards for the retirement community?
I'm thinking that might be it, but here's the best part. Michael B. told investigators that he used crates to reserve two handicapped parking spaces for women attending the game. Interesting.
Right.
Was he trying to sleep with these women? Clearly.
I hope.
I think so, yeah.
Well, actually, I've heard that is people in retirement communities are at the highest risk for... STDs, yeah.
Really, you
because
both were in tune
with
that.
There's a lot of sex going on in those places.
I've seen it, and it's interesting that maybe the 67-year-old's not a member at this home, but he's
trying to shoot some game. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So he's going for. So yeah, where was it? Where was I? Okay. Other handicap spaces were open and available, yet Donald H., the 84-year-old man, set his sights on the ones Michael had saved. So he parked there, and basically Michael approached him, and Donald turned around and sprayed him in the face with pepper spray. And I guess they were in they had a few fights earlier in the week, not physical.
Right.
But yeah.
So this is a feud that had been going on, I guess.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I missed what exactly did the retirement member do to earn the face spraying? Or I'm sorry. It was the member that sprayed the security guard?
Yes, the member sprayed the security guard because the security guard was yelling at him and chasing after him.
So where did the retirement home member get pepper spray?
I don't know.
There's lots of things we got to figure out about this place. I'm kind of imagining it being like the retirement home in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm picturing the Wild West at this point.
That's true. I mean, there are a lot of things to question. It's like, for a second I thought, or I should say I was hoping, Dan, that it was going to be a matter of, like, jealousy.
You know, that could be part of it, but again, they kind of lead the story at that. The security guard won't be pressing charges. I think it is. I think it maybe the security guard was hitting on one of the girls that the 84-year-old was interested in.
And also, I guess you're allowed to just freely leave this place because they were out driving around.
Yeah, that's another interesting point.
Yeah.
See, I don't know how that works with those kinds of places. Have either of you guys ever dealt with the effects of pepper spray before?
No.
I have not, no.
No? I haven't either. Have you? I've heard from someone recently that it's pretty bad, no.
So what I can do for this upcoming weekend is I can get some and spray Joey and record it, and then we'll...
Right, kind of an experiment, yeah.
Yeah.
And then be like, now you have to come talk about it.
Yeah. I think that might work. He texted me, by the way, during this.
What do you have to say?
I just told him. I said, we've started the first episode, and he just said, classic. That's it. I'm getting the sense he thinks he's too cool for school, because his girlfriend still goes to the University of Dayton, and I have a feeling, you know, he's big man on campus, alum, he's there all the time, he gets, you know, he's looked up to,
right,
which is a rarity at a physical sense.
So, we can cut this whole part out, but I think you should just email this specific chunk to him.
No, I don't think we should cut this part out.
Yeah, no, it's a call. I haven't said anything. So here's the thing for our listeners. We have a fourth member. He just doesn't know it yet. We're trying to lure him in. Basically, we're trying to write him a big enough contract to lure him away from whatever else he might be doing from his company, yeah. From being an engineer.
Yeah, I know, I'm not quite sure. But let me finish up this story. There is a last
piece. Oh, we're not even done. There's more to it.
Yeah. Right. In March, a teen was arrested after falsely yelling bingo at a Kentucky bingo parlor and was ordered to not even say the word for 6 months.
What?
The month before, an all-out brawl erupted at a New Hampshire bingo game when a woman selling beauty products was disrupting the event. So... the lesson, children, is to not fuck around at a bingo game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, now that you say that, the Kentucky headline is one that I had heard. I just didn't know there was so much activity in bingo news these days.
Yeah.
Well, it's a big thing.
Let me try to make this a segment, maybe, bingo news.
Bingo news, if you can do it. Maybe it won't be weekly, but if you can make bingo news a segment, that's great.
Or maybe senior news. Get some senior stories.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Let's see if we can do that.
Right now, before we shut down here, I've actually got a couple of headlines myself. Okay. And maybe we'll do... No, I'm sorry. It's just one. All right, guys. So here's what I got for you. There is a company, and please tell me if you guys had heard of the original product, but they basically released a follow-up product to something that they already had. But it's a company that makes they had already created bacon lube, and now they've created bacon flavored condoms.
No.
Now I'm going to read you this, and this is coming from Fox News. And it says bacon is sure in these days, even in the bedroom. According to a report from mobile and home broadband website OrangeNews.com, associated with AT&T. A company named JD Foods has come up with bacon-flavored products with the appropriate slogan, "Make your meat look like meat."
Jesus H.
Now, let me proceed. A spokesperson for JD Foods described the new condom flavor for the customer who is a discerning bacon lover that hates the smell of coconut and or have always wanted to bring even more bacon into the bedroom. Even more bacon. By the way, because bacon was obviously already in the bedroom. Now, if that's not enough, the company has also launched a bacon-flavored lubricant. The quote here is, "Truly the new standard of animal protein-themed prophylactics. Bacon condoms are proudly made in America of the highest quality latex and rigorously tested to help ensure the utmost reliability and safety for when you're making bacon."
Oh my God!
That's my thing. Would you even trust a bacon condom?
No, I wouldn't trust any flavored condom, to be honest with you. Just one paragraph here left, and as an added bonus, each bacon condom has been generously coated with J&D's Bacon Lube, an ultra premium bacon flavored personal lubricant. So, the thing is here, and I'm going to speak in a generality, but I think men are more often into bacon than women.
I was just going to say that. I don't know too many women that love and crave bacon.
Right? So, like, what benefit is there? I mean, I guess the lube maybe more than the condom, but it's just, it's a strange thing. I agree, though. Flavored condoms in general would make me nervous.
I personally, you know what, I can't imagine it being a financial success.
No.
Again, maybe I can do some test runs on this if I could find some willing candidates.
When you meet Joey.
Now, again, this came out on April 3rd. Did you guys did you follow the whole Scope thing? Where they
yes.
On like
yeah.
March 26th, they said they had bacon-flavored mouthwash. Did you hear this, Schwartz?
I did not.
Okay, so they announced it. Came out with a campaign. I forget exactly what the slogan was, but they had one. You know, a full advertising campaign, like they had this new product.
Okay.
Let me see if I can figure out what that slogan was.
Did you say this was April 1st or just an actual thing?
No.
It was a joke, right?
That they announced this.
Oh, geez.
The Scope. Okay. The bacon flavored condom story is from April 3rd.
So none of this is April Fool's.
No. But this Scope bacon thing was for breath that sizzles. That was their tagline.
Ugh.
They did announce that it was an April Fool's.
Okay, because they had an advertisement running across YouTube, and it included products such as a bacon bra for women, which actually could be pretty useful.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other ones. It was absurd, but
I think there's been sort of a fad with just bacon in general lately that I'm hoping sort of plays out soon.
Yeah.
But it just feels like sort of just a very popular thing, just a like, I guess. I don't know. It's an odd thing to say, but there's Denny's has all this bacon ice cream and stuff.
Right.
It's a whole thing that just feels like a giant sort of
fad.
Fad, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I the earliest memory I can remember, I think Wendy's did the Baconator.
Right.
Which is that was like the first one that really pushed it. Yeah, but I think I might get that after this is over, by the way.
Well,
I'm kind of craving it now.
And then Burger King came out with a bacon sundae, right?
Yeah.
Yep. That was sort of the first in what I think Andrew's saying, like of like trying to make it like this new fad that was just ridiculous. But
and the reason I don't buy it is because I think I like bacon just as much as, you know, like anybody else. But
you like bacon.
I don't see
bacon.
Myself going crazy over it, you know, to the point where I want to just like put it on, you know, everything and that kind of thing.
Right. I agree. Well, guys, I think that's it for this week. We do have an email
before
address.
Before we go.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, yeah.
No, tell the email first.
I was just going to say we have an email address for people to be able to hit up. It's just mediadrivelpodcast@gmail.com. So people have questions, comments, recommendations, logo designs, recipes.
Can we get spelling on that?
Yeah, so mediadrivel, mediadrivel. Podcast, podcast, @gmail.com. So okay. People can email that with honestly anything. So all 12 listeners can send in all the stuff that they have.
Three of which are us, the fourth, Joey.
maybe not.
Maybe.
He might not even listen. No, but yeah, so people can send in anything they have there. Questions, stories would be great too if they want to have more wacky stories
yep.
we can chat about. But like Dan mentioned earlier, it was a pilot. It was a little bit tamed down. I wouldn't expect it to always stay quite as tame, but it's yeah. whatever we got to do to get Joey on board.
Yeah, I mean, it will, I think, evolve into something like any pilot. You know, the characters aren't there yet. You know, it will evolve. It may be speed up, but, you know. And I, you know, next time I might be drinking, so that could get interesting.
As long as your left side doesn't hurt.
I know, I'm a little concerned about that. Seriously, it made me rethink my my behavior.
That's, sometimes you need that.
But,
what were you going to say, Dan?
Yeah, I was going to say during this, it is about 100 degrees in my room right now.
Oh, somehow. Absolutely, yeah.
And in the process, I successfully removed my socks and my shirt. without taking my headphones off.
That's impressive.
See, all things I didn't start with.
How did you and take open your my shirt window off without taking your headphones off?
Well, to be fair, I had to remove one earpiece at a time.
Okay.
I'm impressed.
But yeah, yeah, I did that.
I am. That's impressive stuff.
It's so hot right now.
Like, worked it around your laptop instead of
it. I could have done that because it was around my my, you know, the string, the wire.
Right, right.
At one point.
Well, let me look here at my GarageBand. But anyway, that's it this week, guys. We'll catch you next week on Media Dribble. That was an hour and 12 minutes, so probably about an hour. Okay. We can cut out some dead space. Andrew, enjoy that. Cut out anything boring.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it was...
I like the second half more than the first half just because, like, you know, it lends itself to, like, some funnier stuff. Like, even some of the stuff what we talked about, you know, news in the industry, I do, too. I think we should, like, once we kind of relaxed into it, though, we were able to say some of our more, like, funnier, you know, more funny comments rather than... Right, and that's part of the problem is, like, you know, whenever you have death, you don't want to be too ridiculous. But when we have, you know, some lighter stuff, it should be easier to be kind of goofy about it. I think that would be good, too. Yeah. I should have gone into the Evil Dead stuff because it was absurd, but it would have been spoiler-riddled in order to cover what needed to be covered. Because, I mean, that movie was nuts. I've never watched anything like that in a theater. Like, no, yeah, it was good. Andrew, do you know what your schedule is next? No, yeah, it was good.